Great, thanks for the introduction. So pivot tracing is joint work with Ryan Rohlke, who did his undergraduate degree at Brown. He's here, and my advisor at Brown, Rodrigo Fonseca. So pivot tracing is about dynamically instrumenting your live distributed systems in order to get real-time statistics about the system, where we want to take those statistics and break them down and correlate and group them by other events that occur across different processes or machines or applications in the system. And I'm just going to go ahead and give an example in order to make it clear what I'm talking about. So fortunately, the first talk in this session talked a bit about Hadoop. So just to recap, a typical Hadoop deployment might comprise the Hadoop distributed file system, something like HBase, a distributed database that stores its data inside HDFS, and then a data analytics framework like MapReduce that can operate over data in both HDFS and in HBase. And in this hypothetical example, we'll add some users and workloads. So let's say we have a couple of clients that are directly accessing HDFS, a couple of clients to HBase that are indirectly accessing data in HDFS, and then two MapReduce jobs that are sorting data that resides within HDFS. So in this scenario, let's ask the question, how might you go about monitoring the cluster's disk usage? So a reasonable place to start would be in HDFS, since it's the underlying distributed file system that all of these other systems are using. And fortunately, it does track some disk statistics labeled here as the data node metrics in HDFS. And this will track the read and write throughput of HDFS across all the machines of your cluster. And so if you ran the setup as we did, you would be able to collect those statistics and plot them over time, showing the throughput broken down by the host machines. However, what if you wanted to instead attribute disk consumption to the applications that are directly accessing HDFS? HDFS doesn't provide a grouping like this, and it doesn't report disk consumption statistics back to its clients. All it sees are basically incoming RPC calls, and it doesn't know who they actually belong to. However, pivot tracing can capture this type of grouping. So we can take the same data and instead plot it according to the applications that are accessing HDFS. And here we see that, for example, MapReduce and HBase are the large consumers of disk. Now, again, what if we are instead interested in disk throughput, but grouped by the top-level client applications, so like the tenants who submitted the work to the cluster in the first place? That is a particularly useful grouping because it tells you who you can blame ultimately for using the cluster. But for the same reasons as before, HDFS doesn't provide this metric grouping. HDFS just doesn't have visibility into these other applications. Everything is just black box to it. So again, with pivot tracing, we can query this relation. And again, we can plot the same data, but this time broken down by the top-level client application. So returning to the original question, we were asking how disk bandwidth was being used in our cluster. So unfortunately, this only captures the disk that's going through HDFS, and it will miss, for example, intermediary disk accesses that MapReduce happens to make in order to spill the output between map and reduce phases. So an alternative place that we might look to capture disk statistics would be to instrument Java's I/O streams. Since all of these are Java processes, this would capture all the disk consumption. So doing this, you would capture the extra disk consumption from processes that previously were missing. But again, we still lack visibility into who is actually responsible for this. So ideally, we would want to capture all of this disk consumption while still attributing it to the top-level clients. This figure shows not only those clients that are consuming disk, but also from which process. So in the rest of the talk, I'll show how pivot tracing can obtain and correlate these metrics, as well as any other metrics from arbitrary points across these systems and any system. But before that, I'm going to go into the two important reasons why this is hard to do today. So the first reason is that today, logging and monitoring is incorporated into the system at development time. So we usually have to decide a priori what we want to log or monitor. So when we encounter a problem in a deployed system, the logging and monitoring tools in place often don't have the right information that we need to diagnose a problem. And then simultaneously, they probably have a lot of irrelevant information, making it very difficult to consume what is actually recorded. So if the user needs something that the system doesn't currently report, they're going to have to go back to the developers or patch the software themselves just to add this little piece of extra information. And then we have to ask whether it's worth the cost of adding the instrumentation to solve a problem that most users might not need. And we found ample evidence of this sort of thing in Apache's issue trackers, where users are requesting new metrics or different breakdowns of existing metrics. For example, there's an issue here from HDFS, which is just requesting HDFS usage broken down by user and group, which is what I showed at the start of this presentation. Nonetheless, this issue remains unresolved after nearly 2 years now. The second reason why this is hard to do today is that we often want to correlate information from different services and different applications. And there are myriad ways to break down and group even just a single metric. So as we saw in the HDFS, for example, even though disk is really fundamental to a file system, it can't account for all the different ways that an operator might want to break down and group that metric. So correlating events across multiple systems is inherently difficult since these systems are designed to compose. And it's unfortunate because the systems very rarely embed monitoring that is designed to compose with other services. And taken to its extreme, we can consider something like Netflix's microservices Death Star, where the global configuration is constantly changing. You aren't going to know the dependencies on your service in advance, and you're not going to know the questions or correlations that might be asked by users or operators. So, pivot tracing addresses both of these challenges by combining two key techniques. First, we use dynamic instrumentation so that we can defer until runtime our choice about what we want to monitor. And then second, we generalize some well-explored techniques from causal tracing so that we can correlate events from different points in the system at runtime in a generic and easy way. So a natural way for us to explore and use these features is to begin by modeling the system events as the tuples of a streaming distributed data set over which we then dynamically evaluate relational queries. In order to express causality between events that occur in different parts of the system, we introduce the happen before join operator, which joins tuples produced in different locations based on Lamport's happen before relation. With this happen before join, we're subsequently able to group and filter events from one part of the system based on properties of events that causally precede them in other parts of the system. And while these are general concepts that can apply to any distributed system, for concreteness, I'll be presenting pivot tracing in the context of our Java prototype and the Hadoop stack. So we'll take a look at how pivot tracing works. In our previous example, we had been looking at data node metrics in HDFS. So now, with this abstraction, we view each literal invocation of this increment bytes read function as producing a tuple that contains features of the event. So for example, the name of the function invoked, the values of local or global variables at the time it was invoked, the host name of the machine, a timestamp, and so on. So in the tuple shown here, it was on the host hop01, and the delta variable had the value 10. So Just as an example of how pivot tracing then expresses relational queries over this data set, the very first figure that I showed plotting disk throughput by host can be expressed as this query, which I'll step through. So we take all of the tuples produced by the increment bytes read function. We then group them by the value of the host name. And then for each group, we sum up the value of the delta variables. And we use the term trace points to refer to these places in the code where pivot tracing can add instrumentation in order to evaluate queries. And trace points typically specify a class and method signature, much like aspect-oriented programming. And it also exports variables that queries are allowed to refer to. So as I've already mentioned, key to pivot tracing is the ability to correlate with events that occur elsewhere in the system. So in order to produce this graph, we had to relate the data node metrics event with the originating client processes that sort of submitted the work in the first place. The happen before join enables us to express this relation, and we can write queries to join tuples from these two trace points. And to be clear about what we mean when we talk about the happen before relation, we'll consider an example request submitted by this tenant here. The request will first go through the client protocol's trace point. Then, subsequently, as the request executes in the cluster, it will eventually hit the invocation of data node metrics. Since these two invocations satisfy the happen before relation, So if we wanted to write a happen before relation between these two trace points, we would end up getting a tuple that contains the values from both the client protocol's trace point and from the data node metrics trace point. So for example, when we pass through client protocols, the process name was hget. When we pass through data node metrics, the host name was hop01. And these are now both present in the resulting tuple. Now, a query on these two trace points would look something like this, which again, I will step through. So first, we select the tuples that come from data node metrics. Then we select the tuples from client protocols and perform a happen before join between the two. We group by the process name from client protocols. Then for each group, we sum up the delta variable from data node metrics. And using the results of this query, for the two tuples that were produced in this example, we would get hget and delta equals 10. Actually installing this query in our example setup, we would then be able to plot this figure as we did. So pivot tracing overcomes the two challenges that I brought up at the start of the talk by utilizing two components. First, queries are installed dynamically into the system at runtime using dynamic instrumentation. In order to do this, a system needs to add a pivot tracing agent to perform this dynamic instrumentation. Second, a system needs to support our baggage abstraction, which is what enables us to implement the happen before join and thereby causally relate the events from different parts of the system. And it's this that I'll give more details on. Specifically, baggage is just a key value container that is propagated alongside the execution of a request as it goes through the system. It's a generalization of some of the well-explored metadata propagation from previous causal tracing work. So if you're familiar with something like Xtrace or Dapper or Zipkin, it's a generalization of the task IDs that get sent around the system in those systems. So it's implemented at the granularity of an individual request within a workload. Each request carries its own baggage. Now, with Barrett baggage, we can propagate state alongside a request for use later. So here I've shown two trace points, A and B, and consider a request that passes through trace point A. Well, here we can put the client name fsread into the baggage. Then later, when the request passes through trace point B, we can get the client name back out of the baggage, and we'll get back fsread. And this combination of a pivot tracing agent that performs dynamic instrumentation, plus a system instrumented with baggage to propagate metadata, is what gives us pivot tracing. It's what makes the system pivot tracing enabled. So finally, I'm going to run through the steps that pivot tracing takes to actually evaluate a query. So we begin with our instrumented system where we've added baggage propagation. And we have the users of our system that are submitting various workloads. As introduced earlier, we have several trace points defined throughout our system that refer to places in the code where pivot tracing can add instrumentation. So I'll highlight two trace points, A and B, as an example. Trace points export identifiers for variables in the code that queries may refer to, as well as default variables like hostname and timestamp. And it's important to stress that trace points are only references to locations in the code. They're not baked into the system. They don't require a priori modifications. They are not on by default. They can just be considered like a recipe for how to instrument the system. And defining and using trace points is not difficult. It's the sort of thing that people do today with systems like dtrace. So now we can write queries about the values exported by trace points. Pivot tracing's query language is just a simple relational query language like link. And here is an example where a user is performing a happen before join between A and B. This is basically the query that we saw earlier. The output of a query is a stream of tuples over time. So a user will submit a query to the pivot tracing front end, which will compile the query into advice, which is our intermediate representation of the instrumentation that we need to install in the system to evaluate the query. It's ultimately installed at the trace points that the query references, and it has an intentionally limited instruction set in order to prevent, for example, loops and recursion. So it can observe the values of trace point exported variables, pack them into the baggage, filter out unwanted values, unpack previously packed values from the baggage, or emit tuples for global aggregation. So the pivot tracing front end then sends the advice to the pivot tracing agents, which dynamically add the advice to the requisite trace points. And we call this process weaving. Okay, so finally, let's take a look at how happen before join is evaluated. It's fairly straightforward. When a request passes through trace point A, the advice A1 here will be invoked. This will observe the process name and pack it into the baggage. Subsequently, if the request passes through trace point B, the advice B1 will be invoked. This will observe the value of the delta variable, unpack the previously packed process name, then emit an output tuple with both values. If there was no process name packed into the baggage, then that means that the request didn't go through trace point A, and therefore there is no happen before relation, so nothing is emitted. And since baggage explicitly follows the path of a request as it executes, happen before join is essentially evaluated in line with the request. So there's no need to sort of throw all tuples globally and perform a costly global evaluation. And in this demonstration, I was just using a simple serial request. In the paper, we explain how this generalizes to requests with concurrency and more. So finally, the local pivot tracing agents aggregate their output tuples locally, and then they periodically publish the tuples back to the front end and ultimately back to the user. So we implemented a pivot tracing prototype, and we evaluated it in the context of the Hadoop stack. Our prototype has the following components. First, we have an agent thread that runs inside every pivot tracing enabled process. The agent has to implement the advice API that we outlined. And in our prototype, we use JavaAssist to dynamically rewrite and reload classes so that they invoke the advice when the trace points are called. We implemented a baggage library with a very straightforward API. The data format is specified using protocol buffers, so baggage can be propagated between systems that are written in different languages. And finally, we implemented a pivot tracing front end that for writing queries, for compiling them to advice, and for submitting them to the pivot tracing agents that are running in the processes. And this front end implements several query optimizations that we outline in the paper, and those let us push operations as close as possible to their source to minimize the number of tuples that are produced and the amount of data that is propagated alongside requests in the baggage. So we instrumented quite a few systems in the Hadoop stack with pivot tracing, and since the paper was published, we've added baggage support also to Spark and Tez. And baggage is a one-time modification. The execution paths of a request don't change. So once you've added baggage to go alongside requests, that's all you need in order to support pivot tracing, in order to support any queries. And due to some techniques that we've developed for automatic instrumentation, we only actually needed between 50 and 200 lines of source code modification in these systems, 50 to 200 lines per system. With pivot tracing enabled, we recorded a baseline overhead of only 0.3% in some application-level benchmarks when there are no queries installed. And this occurs because propagating a baggage that is empty is very cheap. It's 0 bytes, essentially. And there's no overhead for queries or trace points until after they've been installed. On those same application-level benchmarks, we recorded a maximum of 14.3% overhead incurred from queries that were outlined in the paper. And this is actually a really good overhead because the benchmarks were the worst case we could find, where the requests were sub-millisecond, CPU-only, lock-free lookups. And of all the queries in the paper, the largest baggage was only about 137 bytes. So it's not much additional data that's going alongside requests. So in the interest of time, I won't be presenting any further experiment results, but I will explain the type of problems that pivot tracing can solve. First, pivot tracing can relate arbitrary metrics at one point in the system with identifiers meaningful elsewhere, like those that we saw at the start of this talk. And for many of these queries, the overhead is sufficiently low that long-lived monitoring could be implemented using pivot tracing instead of baking it in yourself. Second, pivot tracing can measure latencies by using timestamps between trace points. And we diagnosed the limping hardware problem that occurred in our cluster, where a faulty network cable downgraded a link and resulted in some strange end-to-end latency issues. And finally, pivot tracing can be used to debug recurring problems in distributed systems, where the kinds of debugging information that we need is very specific to the problem, and it's unlikely to be included in any existing system logs or metrics. We uncovered a bug in HDFS that led to significant data skew between the different storage nodes of the system. And we were only really able to find this because pivot tracing gave us the ability to correlate information from the clients, from HDFS's name node, and from the data nodes simultaneously. And that's this bug here. Our experiments embody the kind of seamless correlations that pivot tracing can perform at runtime, even for very specific one-off metrics. So to conclude, with pivot tracing, we introduced the happen before join that enables queries to be contextualized by Lamport's happen before relation. Pivot tracing addresses the limitations of logging and debugging in distributed systems by combining dynamic instrumentation with causal tracing. And we believe that the overheads of evaluating the happen before join are sufficiently low that pivot tracing is suitable for production systems, both for high-level standing queries and for digging deeper when necessary. We've got a website now. It's got a .io domain name, and it's made with Bootstrap, so it's a legitimate project. And with that, I will conclude my presentation.
Have time for one or two questions. Hi, my name is Jarrell. So can you elaborate a little bit more on the implementation of the baggage? Because, how would you guarantee the baggage can travel along with the request? To me, if the baggage itself is the part of the request, then that's trivial. But it seems that the baggage is separate from the request, that is being traced. So how did you implement that?
So this is white box system instrumentation. A developer who wants pivot tracing in their system would have to come along and explicitly annotate the code paths to propagate baggage. Typically, in this sort of system, that's done with things like thread local variables, like goroutine pointers, that sort of thing. So it's the boundaries of the execution that matter. So if you spin off a thread, you've got to make sure that you pass the baggage to the new thread. If you're enqueuing a context into a request queue, make sure you include the baggage with that. If you're making a network call, make sure you include it in, say, the headers of the network call. But it's a manual instrumentation. But saying that, we've done a lot of work in automating this, and we believe that it's not too much effort. I mean, I instrumented 7 systems without wasting a year of my life, which is...
So Carlos Malza and UC Santa Cruz, actually, this is a related question. What infrastructures do you use to automate it? I mean, it seems like you're relying a lot on Java's aspect-oriented mm-hmm. tools. Have you any experience on other languages like C++? Is it going to be much more difficult, maybe?
So this is a very common question. Personally, I don't have any instrumentation, any experience with instrumenting in C++. We've only done it in Java. I have some colleagues at Microsoft who have used some code rewriting tools to achieve similar things to what we've done here. A sort of corollary to everything that I've been saying is that in many systems, they already propagate something like a request ID. For example, in Windows, if you're using ETW tracing, as like much of Microsoft's cloud is, then there is already propagation of like semantically the same thing. So it's just a case of changing that to baggage from what was previously an ID. In Java, we get to take advantage of things that might not exist elsewhere.
And one more question is, are you aware of any efforts to actually also have that in operating systems?
The only effort that I will say is that we would like that. So we're trying to do something along those lines.
Okay, let's take one more while Giannis gets set up.
Hi, Andrew Wong, Cloudera. Great talk. I really enjoyed it. So we're actually working on tracing in upstream Hadoop right now in the context of the HTrace project, sort of inspired by ideas in XTrace and Zipkin and so on and so forth. And one of the core ideas is that these are sampling tracers where we only turn it on for, let's say, 1% of all requests. Let's only pay that tracing overhead for that, the context of that one request where it's on. But here, it sounds like for some of these aggregations we care about, things like calculating the aggregate disk bandwidth of a user across the cluster, we need to turn on tracing thus for every single framework, every single data node while we're running this query.
Yep.
So you're paying this 40% overhead for every single process in our cluster versus just the context of one single sampled request.
Right.
Can you comment on that at all?
So the sampling that that HTrace uses and that like Zipkin uses as well is to reduce the overhead of the logs that are produced. It has a minuscule effect. If you choose not to propagate some HTrace IDs because you're not sampling a request, that's gonna have a negligible effect on the request. It's the generation of the logging statements that HTrace uses that has this big overhead. And just for sort of your information, we've implemented XTrace and started implementing HTrace on top of baggage. If you're using a common metadata propagation layer like baggage, it means that if you want to deploy any of these systems, if you want to deploy HTrace, XTrace, whatever, you sort of pay the price once for metadata propagation, for developer effort for instrumentation, and never again. And since baggage is empty by default, it's very, very little overhead.
Well, again, so once you turn this on for computing some aggregate, we have to now store all this information about the reads that we're collecting for a single user. And I imagine storing this information is like pretty expensive.
Well, so in that case, we're not actually generating and persisting logging statements. We immediately just observe the variables and aggregate some local counters. So it's lower overhead than logging, at least.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan.
Great. Thanks.